Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Thank you from the heart, the mind, and the soul. Anyway, it is a lovely day here on July 10th. I hope everybody's having a marvelous day. Or what Billy Crystal used to say, it's simply marvelous. Anyway, I have a very intense show to get into here. Something I've been holding back to dealing for a bit, because I wanted to know all the, get into the frame of all things. And, but before I do, I know, just really quickly for all those out there, do, if you have any questions or comments or whatever, send them straight on over. And of course you can see it there on your, at flyingpigs@artlover.com. Of course that's my email. And if you have any either there, got MySpace, of course, check, send it on over, any messages or whatever, to Andrew Fetter, or MySpace.com/Andrew Fetter. And of course, that was my intro, what had incorporated with Masonic Temple's song. I'd have to thank them for help allowing me to incorporate that, or helping me out incorporate that into my intro, and do check them out at myspace.com, mestem, M-A-S-T-E-M, of course, what I've heard lately, and I'll let you guys know when it does happen. I know, and I believe sometime 2010, they will be coming back permanently to the United States, and be doing some, I hear, tours, which will be grandiose. Now, getting to the subject of today, some of them would say resistance is futile. Now I know what you're all thinking. Probably think, God, come on, Andy, resistance is futile. That sounds like a little Star Trek-y. It's little was as the Borgs. We ain't no damn Borgs. Or are we not? Are we not drones? Are we not slaves? And so who is they's? Who's they's, yo master? That is the real question. But it's not really a question. It's already sort of obvious. I mean, think about it. They'll feed us with their little candy, like maybe a carrot or two or more. Like a house, a car. They'll throw in some candy canes to keep us busy, like some video games, some football games, some basketball games, some music, entertainment, beer. They'll even slide in those dark things like little ganja on the bong or anything else. All these are to entertain you, to keep you busy, keep you distracted, to keep you occupied from what's really the game. You know, what's the best way to keep a, you know, the person occupied? Deception. And then you ask, again, who are they? And you're might going to go, okay, Andy, come on, now you're going to start talking about all this conspiracy crap. Oh, God, here comes it, like another Alex Jones. Oh, God, here we come again. Well, perhaps it not really is crap. You know, I don't really like get into the conspiracies of things. You know, but some things are more obvious than others. And sometimes we can wishfully wish them not to be, but sometimes when they truly are, they truly are. And you can't avoid it. You have to meet it on. So with due diligence, as I go through all this stuff, I really think it'd be amicable for all my listeners, all the listeners out there, my listeners, not mine, you're the listeners, to do your own research. Check it out for yourself, and then you decide. Hear what I have to say, and then you decide. You know, like you'll never, by the way, ever hear any mainstream media ever talk about them. And again, who are them? Well, lo and behold, I don't know if everybody's been aware, probably went right over like a little airplane. Because this news was sort of like slipped right through during the Iranian revolt that was happening after elections, and everybody was like, whoa, and all the news, and there's Michael Jackson, and then, you know, Farrah Fawcett, and all the people that died, and all the commotion, and through the news media, they slip in Barack Obama, Barack Obama expanded the powers to these folks. In fact, he made the decision regarding our economy, like they don't really have control, but he officially gave them the unrestricted authority, as Eric Cartman would say, to them. And again, you're going to go, well, who are they? Well, you obviously know because you saw in the beginning of my show who the heading. Of course, I'm talking about they is perhaps maybe the Federal Reserve. You know, that's just one of the icebergs or one of the instruments of they. So who and what is actually and what is this the thing called the Federal Reserve, which you'll never obviously ever hear them talk about. You'll see a chairman in front of the chair. You'll see it on your dollar bills and everything. But the fact is the Federal Reserve is a private entity. It is not a public entity. And that's really important to understand. It's private. It's not, you don't vote for them. You don't elect them. You don't have any say to them. Even the government has no say to them because they are privately owned, and they basically dictate. And there's, of course, two names that come up to, you'll know, and this is a historical fact, of what is the Federal Reserve and who created it and who actually owns it. And now two names that will pop up is the Morgans and the Rockefellers. And that is a historical fact. Now, when it comes to being of, it's probably the one of the greatest, I can't say the biggest scam because there's been plenty, one of the greatest scams in history is probably is the Federal Reserve. Because basically, it's made the, not just the American people, but an entire world has become suckers, basically, into the system. Because they're all interweaved together. And just in case you don't know that, you know, like I said, the Federal Reserve is a private company of bankers. There's supposed to be like 12 branches, which in reality confiscate our money. And they've been doing it for over 100 years. And even the 12 that you, there are 12 that are listed on paper, they're really not 12. Because they're owned, one owns the other, sort of like, you know, the mergers and things that wasn't by coincidence. And of course, they're not part of the United States government. Yet, it is a fact that they collect hundreds and billions of dollars from all American taxpayers every single year. And you're going, how do they collect our money? It's called interest. They've created debt, which I'll get into. So pay attention to this little scam. You know, there was a famous banker who once said, and this is so true, let me issue and control a nation's money, and I really care not who writes its laws. Of course, this was said by Rothschild from in Britain. And is that not true? Now, I'll give you a little history of American history for those out there around the world listening in. Because, that, like, again, it does relate to all the world. Because we're all being played and made fools of. It is a little, here's a little history lesson for us to get through into the situation of the banking industry and how it all came about in the United States. It started off, let's say, it basically started with Alex Hamilton, who in the first place lobbied for a private federal bank in 1789, which the Congress did charter the bank. And of course, famously said, Thomas Jefferson, who was adamantly opposed to such an idea of a privately owned federal bank, had said, I sincerely believe that the banking institutions having the issuing power of money are more dangerous to the liberty than standing armies. Boy, see the, you know, Rothschild said it, Jefferson said it. Now, in 1811, under President James Madison and Vice President George Clinton, I'm not talking Bill now, this is back in 1811, which had broken the tie of votes to in the Congress to cast the bankers out, thus refusing to renew the charter of the bankers, and thus there was still private banking. So it only lasted for a small period. That was the first time they had, you know, that short period of time of private banking controlling the currency in the United States. But unfortunately, it was President Madison who proposed a second United States privately owned central bank, and then it came back into existence in 1816. And of course, then it was until 1836, until Jackson overriding the Congress, and of course he made his closing comment about the banking, private banking, the bold effort of the present bank had made to control the government are but premonitions of the fate that await the American people. Should they be deluded in a perpetuation of this institution or establishment of another like it, we will have another one in the hence we have one right now like it. Now, Jackson had also said, and he's referring to the bankers, and this is sort of just a little slur, you are the den of the vipers and thieves, and I intend to rout you out. By the eternal God, I will rout you out. I can just see him saying that. Anyway. But lo and behold, you know, that banking system, the two Federal Reserve systems, way back when, the early 1800s, only lasted 20 years of each. But since that time, a little over, for the third one, a little over 100 years now, we've had the new one. Now, how did it all come about? Well, in order to get things rolling on the right track, they tried to initiate an income tax. But in 1895, and you can all look this up, a federal income tax was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. Okay? And you can all look that up. But shortly after that, or not long after, it was about maybe approximately 15 years later, a little bit less, a senator, who happens to be Senator Nelson Aldrich, presented a new proposal, a new bill of income tax. And, of course, it went through. And if you don't know who Nelson Aldrich, he was very well in tied with J.P. Morgan. He also, coincidentally, was married to John D. Rockefeller's daughter. Okay? So once they had the IRS, Internal Revenue Service, in place, you know, basically creating a income tax to set up their game plan. Then the next step, of course, which was right after that, with Woodrow Wilson. And of course, this was in 1913, the year after Woodrow Wilson was elected president. But just prior to his election, he needed actually financial support, you know, backing. You know, like any lobbyist, whatever, would come to his aid, and then, of course, he had to do a payback. So he got his money for his campaign, and he reluctantly agreed, but, you know, they say reluctantly agreed. Who thinks that? But he had promised them, of course, he would, if he elected, he would, of course, sign the Federal Reserve Act. And what did he do? After being elected, within a year, 1913, while many of the members of Congress were, by the way, home for Christmas, the Federal Reserve Act was rammed through the Congress and later signed by, you know who, President Wilson. And of course, Wilson supposedly had said, oh, I feel so remorseful and everything else. I have unwittingly ruined my country. Now, there's also something I have to explain. You will find that most of the members, and this is not by coincidence I get here, most of the members that created the Federal Reserve happen to be the very same people who created an organization called the Council of Foreign Affairs, who happened to be Rockefeller and the Morgans and Wilson, okay, who happened to be one of the front people with, of course, we all know about House being part of that, which I'll explain to you about the Council of Foreign Affairs. I think it's sort of coincidental. But what is really the Federal Reserve? And I'll explain to you what they do. It is really pretty simple. It's almost like playing a game of Monopoly. They make a hypothetical currency, and that then they lend this currency. You know, they print it on paper, make those notes. They're called notes. That's why they say notes. And they lend this currency, this piece of paper, because, you know, they didn't have computers back then, and they lend it to the federal government, right? And they lend it to the banks, thus creating, it's a lent. It's a lent thing. It's debt. So they actually made up a facade of debt. No, it's bullshit. It's a made-up myth of debt. It's an illusionary thing. They never... The government never borrowed any money. How can they borrow debt? It's borrowed paper. It's made up. That's the whole game. It's all illusion. And in fact, the only thing that ever, you know, as it prints its money, it's actually, like I said, it's printing the debt. So it's basically under an illusion that we, or the government and everybody else included, must repay this illusionary debt of something that doesn't exist. And this is what's called a perpetual lending of debt that we assume that must be paid. It's a facade. And this doesn't count and go through not just from the United States, it transcends through the world because everything is subjugated to the dollar and the banking system has been centralized around the world. You know, people have asked, the world, new world order, they're going to have a new currency, a new world dominated currency. They already have one. It's called the dollar. I was telling that to my producer. You know, everybody was talking about, what's the world currency they're going to make? Hello. Let's see. Everything is subjugated to the dollar. Oil is against the dollar. Look at the futures market against the dollar. Even foreign currencies, you know, like the euro, what do they look at? They don't go look, hey, how many euros to a yen? They go, how many euros to a dollar? Even in exchange markets, they may go exchange from one to another, but who do they look at as the threshold, the like 0.0, the absolute? The dollar, because in fact, the dollar has become the new world currency. It's already been there. They already created it. So anyway, they've created this illusionary perpetual lending of debt that we must assume that we have to pay back. Now, not just one Federal Reserve note, by the way, is not a single Federal note, Federal Reserve bank note, is backed up by any precious metal, such as gold, because it's basically, like I said, it's a monopoly game. It's paper. It's nothing. And now it's on electronically. It's like this little electron that's a little running through a computer. Well, everybody's on an assumption that there's actually some kind of real debt, but it isn't. It's an illusion. And you'll never hear this, by the way, on mainstream TV, of course, or any of that stuff, you know, because they're a part of it, you know. God forbid we wake up from this, we've been lied to. Now, this perpetual illusion of debt, it maintains that you and I are, what? Enslaved. We have to pay back this debt by, as a, through what? Our labor. Thus, in actuality, we have actually volunteered to be servitudes, thus the serfdom, or slavery, by continual assumption that we must pay back something, right? In essence, we were born under the guise of debt. No matter what you say, we're always in debt. The government's in debt, right? You always hear that. Of course, because they borrowed what? The money. Everything's in debt. The mortgages. Everything, every government, everything you see is in debt. So somewhere along the line, even if you think you paid up your debts, you're still in debt. Like I said, you're born in debt. Even the richest person in the world, he has currency. What does he have? Money? No, he's in debt. Those notes that he holds is debt. It's not real money, like I said. He doesn't sit on a bag of gold or something more real. Now, this is why I am saying that there's a continuation of debt within the government, to make us assume and think that we must work to pay off. This is our monetary system. In itself is an illusion. And this is why we are freely volunteering ourselves by our own acceptance, which indeed is quite illogical. It is illogical as a hamster running around on a circular treadmill thinking that it's going to pay off its debt, but it never does. Humanity is on this circular treadmill. And by the way, people who think that, oh, what about inflation? The idea of this printed paper, why they consistently have to print more and more, and they create more debt, is basically a continuation of inflation. No matter what they do, it'll go up and down. You can look out on the curvature. It's always a process of inflation. And you can look at it from day one. There's never a deflation. You'll have a jump that drops down, but there'll always be inflation because it's printed bullshit debt. So, we basically can't go anywhere, can we, huh? Now, the Federal Reserve, there's nothing I love to talk about, which nobody ever talks about even. All them, they make interest, right? They loan money to the banks, they loan money to the government. Yet, and they get interest for it, right? You'll see our Federal Reserve, there's a, they're with you, the Fed rate, people probably have heard. Do you know that they do not ever pay income tax for the profit of that interest? Get it? They don't pay zero taxes. Well, how could they? Because they're one the same. The Internal Revenue Service and the Federal Reserve, are one, and you know, they're sort of connected. If you listen how they collect the money from the Treasury, Treasury acts as actually a collecting agent for the Federal Reserve. They're not collecting the money and sticking it in their pocket. It goes toward the Federal Reserve because they have to pay the Federal Reserve back its money. Just like a bank, you know, you borrowed it, you got to pay it back. Essentially, they're almost acting like it's almost like a mortgage. You have a collecting agency for the mortgage company. The mortgage company borrows money from another bank. So there's an in-between. Ultimately, when you get to the final place where the debt occurred, it's from the Federal Reserve. When you get to the final, it's like there was no chicken before the egg or the egg before the chicken because there was never an egg in the first place. So we didn't really have or need, we didn't have nor did we need an income tax until we had the Federal Reserve back. So the income tax was only needed to what? To pay interest back to the bankers for our money that was loaned by our governments. And this is worldwide. Because they loan money to all the governments back and forth to pay for more military. That's why they like wars here and there. That's why they like scuffles. And they, you know, they manipulate stuff. And you'll notice why the banking's all of a sudden went down and now it's being re-centralized. when you'll notice how all the re-centralization came where? Back to the United States. Even governments had problems. Why? They're now more in control by the Federal Reserve, ultimately. So you'll read, like right now, like I said, the Fed, which prints mostly, is mostly on paper and computers and creates this facade of money, and then pays, by the way, only a small little printing fee for its currency, and then loans its money to the government. But our taxes that we have to work for pays this interest on this loan that costs the feds nothing to make. Now, isn't that a really sweetheart of a deal? I mean, it makes the mob look really sweet, doesn't it? You know, here's just a little hype, some little facts. I mean, these are just back numbers. I mean, the current numbers obviously are way ahead. But I know in March of 2006, for example, the national debt was $8.2 trillion. Now it's way, way, way beyond that. Look at just from the war in Iraq. Now they're talking about, you know, why Congress, and they're talking about raising money for health care and this, that, and this. They don't really care. They can sit there and print that money all day long. You know, because there's the debt is an illusion. When people feel, oh my God, the government's in debt. They're not in debt. All they do is print more fucking money. Even the states that have IOUs, they're being played toward because they're trying to, it's more control. It's create more magic. Like in California and everywhere else, all those IOUs. How the hell can a government IOU its employee? Can you imagine you do that to an employee? By the way, you work for me for a whole week, I'm going to send you an IOU. Or can you send back the IRS or Franchise Tax Board or any other entity, hey, you know what, I owe you money, here's an IOU, I'll pay you later. They'd fucking seize your accounts. They'd seize your property, wouldn't they? Anyway, so in actuality, like I said, the Federal Reserve owns the United States, and our elected officials are beholden to these bankers, not the American people. The feds are ultimately, basically, an unseat-chattel government. They are the ones who are governing our once great republic. They control both our houses of Congress and the United and President. And no one will ever, ever dare to oppose them. How could they? They are the powerful. They've created this illusion of power. By the way, power is an illusion. Because this control of money of supply that they've created is one of the biggest cons ever. And no con artist or group of con artists in history ever perpetuates such a long-standing scam as what we've encountered. In fact, it's so worldwide. In fact, if you want to know about the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, for example, there are two gentlemen named, and you can look this up, Bill Benson and Red Beckman, who put in two volumes of work. They were called The Law That Never Was. And the 16th Amendment, which created the Internal Revenue Service, by the way, was never properly ratified, not even by one single state. In fact, these gentlemen traveled back then, because that was when they had 48 states, to verify if indeed it was ratified. So in a very real sense, the income tax is today illegal. But you're not going to hear anybody fight them, right? As many of you know, that if you try not paying the IRS, how far you'll get with them? They'll sit there, confiscate your money, confiscate your property, and take everything from you. And how can they do that? Well, it starts a thing back in the, anytime you open a bank account, it's owned by the Federal Reserve, right? Well, subject to the terms of the Federal Reserve. When you sign it, you're accepting the terms of the Federal Reserve, which is acceptance of paying taxes to the Internal Revenue Service. When you collect a check from your payroll, throughout the whole banking system, it's so set up so any monies that go through any bank, the only way you can get out of it, of not paying that, even in foreign currency, ultimately, you know how they have you there? Because it's through a bank, it's through the Federal Reserve. ultimately, and that's how they get corporate people overseas, you owe money from foreign overseas, that's how they do that. Because it's ultimately, you've signed somewhere along the line a bank. And then there's another important fact to understand, too. Because we have relinquished our rights as natural citizens. This happened in 1933 because the government went bankrupt. So thank you to FDR to save the government, to bail them out at that time. For they put up collateral. The people of the United States is collateral. And if you're wondering, what the hell am I talking about? Well, that's when it was required to have birth certificates on every individual. And you'll notice, if you look on birth certificates on every individual, it's almost, it falls under admiratory law. It's like registering a birth, okay, of, you know, a birth of a ship. And you're basically turned into an entity. And an entity, when I'm referring entity, if those are not familiar, that's like a corporation. If you look at a corporation's name under legal terms, it's always capitalized. A natural born person is not capitalized legally in its name. But because now you are an entity, your name is now capitalized. You'll notice that on your, and you can check this out, on all your legal documents, whether it's a passport, whether it's your driver's license, whether it's opening a bank account, you will see your name capitalized. When you go to court, your name is capitalized because now we are now under admiratory law. You're no longer under the Constitution. We have constitutional rights, but we have relinquished those. We are now entities. Now, getting back to some of the stuff about the banking, Henry Ford had once said, "It is well enough of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution for tomorrow morning." Wow. And then if people woke up and realized how a facade we have, there'd be a revolution. So to keep us from getting and turning us into like what's happening in Iran, they have to pour out the candy to keep us satisfied. And that's what they're really freaking out. They want us to keep people working and keep us buying, you know, those video games and electronic stuff and those new computers and new gadgets and new cars and, you know, movies and you name it. They want to keep us happy to some extent, to keep us occupied. Because if you own a house or you have a property, you're less likely wanting to revolt because you think that you're going to lose something. Of course, you don't really own it. But you're going to think that you have something to lose. You're going to worry you have the insecurity of your family. How am I going to pay for those bills? How am I going to feed my family? So if you didn't have the ability to pay, you know, you didn't have any money or didn't have any means to feed your family, you know, when you're in dire straits, you know, he'll do what he has to do, as they say. And that could lead to a revolt. And that's why the pouring of candy to keep you somehow satisfied while they still control things. So nearly, like I said, 100 years of existence of the Fed, it has never, ever, by the way, been audited. And like I said, they've never paid any income tax on the billions upon billions they have taken. In fact, according to congressional record, by the way, and this is based upon 2006, U.S. government can buy back the Federal Reserve at any time for a measly $450 million. That's about half the money we would pay them back then, right? Or close to it, whatever. Now, what I understand is this is, do we have the most stupid or do we have the most corrupt leaders in the world or what? I don't think they're stupid. I think it's the other way around. Because it seems that their most number one concern is for them remaining in power and being reelected and earning and enjoying the perks, as they say. Because they see nothing of shirking their real responsibilities of who actually voted for them you know, who they're supposed to be responsible to, the people who elected them. But instead of worrying about the power, the prestigious power, or the paying for their jobs. So, I mean, this is why, Austin, there's also another reason I have to say is the Congress, in effect, really does like the Federal Reserve situation. Because they can keep on spending without any restraints. And then I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat, they're basically doing the same. One does it one way, one does it the other way. But, you know, come on, 8 years of the Republicans, you know, people cry, oh, you know, about putting out money for a health care plan, the trillions of dollars. How many, nobody cried about the trillions of dollars going in Iraq, right? Or the billions and trillions that basically put us in the negative, if you look it on, if the, you consider that real money. I mean, a federal note, like I said, is just what it looks like. It's basically a piece of paper with no real backing. And this is why, by the way, Congress really, like I said, does not hate gold or silver backing any money. Because if you had a backing of a standard, a gold standard, or silver standard backing up against any of our currencies, that would mean they actually have to only spend what they have. It means they have to live within their means. And of course, they wouldn't be getting all those little fancy perks now, would they? Now, this is where the United States government and the Congress have abdicated their power to the Federal Reserve. And this is why our government is no longer a real republic. Because they have violated collectively the Constitution. How, what are you going to do? Get the Supreme Court, who they put in place, to judge them? You know, right? Because here it is, in Article 1, Section 8 of the Congress, this is, I read verbatim, this is what it says, you can all check it out. The Congress shall have the power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, but it doesn't say anywhere in this document that it gives the Congress authority to delegate this responsibility to anyone, much less a bunch of private bankers. See, they have the power to coin the money themselves. They do not have the power to give it an outside source. Who gave them that power? It doesn't say that in Congress. They didn't. They would have to create a new amendment within the Constitution, which they never did. There's no new amendment in the Constitution. They circumvented it. Of course, legally, people, oh, wow, we can't, they'll probably say, oh, it's all bullshit, right? Well, you know, who's involved with that? Now, I don't know if any of you, there's a lot of people out there who, John F. Kennedy, he's one of the damn liberal Democrats, and there's people, oh, man, the Kennedys, he's so great. Well, I don't know what everybody says about John F. Kennedy, you know, what you're, everybody has different views of the man or whatever. But one thing I gotta say, the guy had kahunas. I mean, you're gonna see a different light when I'm about to say about him. See, he actually did take on the Federal Reserve. He realized in his own heart, knowing that how bad he was part of the system, he tried to pull us out of the system that was created by the Federal Reserve. And he also had the courage to do something about it, which, unfortunately, in my belief, may have indeed what really cost him his life. You see, on June 4th, 1963, and you can all check this out, President Kennedy signed a presidential decree, Executive Order 111-1041. And this order virtually stripped the Federal Reserve Bank of its power to loan money to the United States at interest. In doing so, what President Kennedy also declared that the privately Federal Reserve would soon be out of business. In other words, they were going to, here's your money, get the hell out of here. And doing this, in this order, he gave the Treasury Department the authority to issue out silver certificates against silver in the treasury. In other words, there was about to be a real currency, not a monopoly money that we currently have, a real note that was substantiated against a standard that actually sitting there. For every coin, silver certificate, there was silver sitting there against it, right? And this executive order, in fact, still stands today, ironically. It was never officially rescinded. But unfortunately, in less than 5 months of him signing that executive order and presenting it and initiating it, President Kennedy was, of course, assassinated in November 22nd, 1963. And the United States silver notes, as they were called, he had had issued more than what they say, taken were immediately, right after his death, taken out of circulation. And the Federal Reserve notes, of course, continue to serve as the legal currency of this country. And it was estimated there's about 99% of all U.S. paper currency circulating in 1999 of 1990 that are Federal Reserve notes. Now it's probably, you know, literally almost 100%. Now, Lincoln himself also took on the bankers, and he did a very bold step as well, which may have also cost him his life. I say may because, you know, who knows? Way back then. See, during the Civil War, Lincoln, of course, needed money to finance the war for the North. But the bankers were going to charge him, and you believe it, 24 to 36% interest. So Lincoln was sort of, I guess, horrified. I mean, come on. Yeah, 24 to 36%, you could get that from, you know, one of the mobsters there, right? Now, he would have, I mean, it would have basically put the country into unfortunate debt. Well, like, we don't have debt now. And he felt that, God, the country would never find any, it would be impossible to pay back. Oh, my God. Like now. So Lincoln advised Congress to pass a law which authorized the printing of a full legal tender of treasury notes to pay for the war effort. Back, it was famous, and it was recognized the benefits of this issue, but, and he had said, we gave the people of this republic the greatest blessing they'll ever have, their own paper to pay their debts. Of course, these treasury notes were printed with green ink on the back, so the people back then eventually called them, that's where the term greenbacks came from. In fact, Lincoln printed approximately $400 million worth of greenbacks. And I guess that would be quite a bit of money, wouldn't it, of today. Anyway, after he created that debt-free, interest-free money to finance the war, it served as, of course, legal tender for all debts, public and private. And it printed and it was paid to the soldiers, to the Civil War, and the supplies, and etc. Unfortunately, right after President Lincoln was assassinated, the Congress revoked the Greenback Law and enacted its own replacement called the National Banking Act. And then these banks were to be privately owned, and the national bank notes were then issued to be interest-bearing notes. And you can all check that out. In fact, the act also provided the greenbacks would, of course, retire in circulation, which they did. They retrieved them. You know, what happened to that. But like I said, you can always just follow the money. I mean, here's two presidents that were killed. Coincidentally, you might say. Maybe it wasn't really a conspiracy. Maybe this is all BS. Maybe it's just a thought, and you're making colorizing situations. Well, check it out. You make your own determination. But if I reiterate and explain to you what is the Federal Reserve, you decide. I mean, first of all, the Federal Reserve is a centralizing banking, which, like I said, it was created in lie with Senator Aldrich, who, like I said, who was very closely tied in with J.P. Morgan. Of course, he was married to John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s daughter. So he was very much tied in. But that list leads to another couple organizations. And one I had mentioned before called the Council of Foreign Affairs, who, by the way, was created by Woodrow Wilson with Edward House and another guy named John D. Rockefeller. And that's how that thing started. And I think it's just earnest. It's, you know, and then of course, J.P. Morgan was also noted for it. And there was about 100, they call it the inquiry, by the way. But I'm going to list just a few names, and I think you guys can all sort of catch the drift of what I'm talking about, of who and what. And these are just names of more current names. And you'll see the linkings. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican or neocon or liberal or vice versa. You'll be surprised. I mean, these people are all buddies. Harold Brown, Zebrzyk Brzezinski, William P. Bundy, Dick Cheney, George H.W. Bush, you know, that's Bush Sr., William S. Cohen, Warren Christopher, Dianne Feinstein, Tom Foley, David Gergen, Alan Greenspan, who was chairman of what? The Federal Reserve. Chuck Hagel, Richard Halbrook, Gene Kilpatrick, John McCain, George Mitchell. And you'll even have, like, media people. By the way, I'm only listing off, and these are small lists. By the way, you can go Google it yourself and go Wikipedia, but you'll see a whole list of people, and these are just within politics. There's also media. Like, more as a media person who was part of it. By the way, there's David Rockefeller, Jay Rockefeller, Elliot Richardson, George Shultz, Theodore Thorensen, George Soros, going back in history, Adlai Stevenson, Cyrus Vance, Paul Volcker, and Carolyn Kennedy. How coincidental. Of course, there is another organization, and you can look at it, nobody will ever talk about them either. It's called the Trilateral Commission. Of course, it was created in 1973 by then chairman, who was of the Council of Foreign Affairs, who happened to be David Rockefeller, and who else happened to be on the board? A guy named Brzezinski. Yep, you know, who happened to be part of Chase Manhattan Bank, by the way. And that's how that was created in 1972. In fact, Brzezinski was Rockefeller's advisor, supposedly, on international affairs. And who belonged to that organization? Paul Volcker. Oh, yeah. Wasn't he part of the chairman of the Federal Reserve? There's Thomas Foley. Like I said, David Rockefeller, like I had already mentioned. Brzezinski, Anderson, Bruce Babbitt, who was under Interior Secretary for Clinton. Lord Benson, who happened to be the Treasury for under Clinton. George H.W. Bush, Jimmy Carter, you know, Dick Cheney, Bill Clinton, Warren Christopher, William Cohen, yeah, the same names almost, Dianne Feinstein, David Gergen, Hank Greenberg, by the way, the former chairman and CEO of AIG, Kissinger, who happened to be part of the advisory committee for the J.P. Morgan Chase, Walter Mondale, Paul O'Neill, Caspar Weinberger, Paul Wolfowitz, and Andrew Young. I mean, you can see, I mean, there's a whole bunch more and more, but you're going to see a collage of, it doesn't matter, left wing, right wing, they're all buddies. It's a game. And, of course, there's an organization. It's called the Bilderbergs. And, of course, that was formed in 1954. And then the mother of mothers of these organizations, or actually, Council of Foreign Affairs was the United States organization. The worldly organization is called the Bilderbergs, like I said, and it was formed in 1954. And I'll just read off some of the names of that organization. They'll sound all too familiar, again, and you can Google it and find out what they are. Nobody knows what the hell they do, do they? Bilderbergs have created the World Trade Organization, the IMF, International Money Funds, the World Bank is part of the Bilderbergs. And they'll have meetings, but fortunately, you know, you imagine on major media they would, you know, announce these major meetings with very high-ended people. I mean, you hear them when they have G8 or G9 or whatever G, all these big, you know, whatever, major people meeting together, right? But you'll never hear them about these meetings of the Bilderbergs. How come you don't hear these meetings with the Trilateral Commission? How come we don't hear about the meetings with Council of Foreign Affairs? Anyway, here's a quick list of some of the people, and like I'll just run them all quickly. There's like John Edwards, Gerald Ford, past or president, Bill Clinton, of course, John Gozine, Richard Haass, Kissinger, Sam Nunn, Rick Perry, Kathleen Sebelius, Tim Geithner, Lawrence Summers, Paul Volcker, Condoleezza Rice, Tom Daschle, George W. Bush, I mean, Cheney, and here's again one, you guys, it's sort of funny, and this is sort of the foreign ones, I mean, you can Google and check all the list of names, and you'd be laughing, oh, it's not funny, it's sort of sad, how they're all connected, you know, like between Council of Foreign Affairs, Trilateral Commission, but on the foreign affairs side, amazing Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin were both Bilderbergs. And if you know how much money when Yasser died, he was one of the top 10 richest people in the world. No wonder why when he was in Beirut, they didn't want to execute him. They had to have him. The United States had to help him get out of the United States and told the Israelis to not kill him. And they shuffled him off. You know, and this gets into, which I'm not going to get into, what the real idea of trying to, the Palestinian-Israeli thing is, it's all a facade trying to create a new MEU, which I won't get into. It has nothing to do with the Palestinian state. That's never going to happen anyway. But anyway, it's just to understand that these are the organizations. And I don't want to waste every, and it's without, you know, the concern without action is a waste of time. And all I get to say is, like, here's the Federal Reserve, the United Nations, the Council of Foreign Affairs, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergs, and all these elite sort of hidden government situations, which are basically trying to lead us into the New World Order, and they're on a fast track doing so, and they're trying to do it with up speed. And you're not going to like it when we're already the way there, and you're certainly not going to be surprised that we're already halfway there. I mean, it's only we, as a people, as a world nation, as a humanity, can save not just this republic, but the world as a whole, because it's our right, it's our freedom. You know, Carol Quigley, President Clinton's mentor, professor at Georgetown University, once had said, they want nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole, controlled in a feudalist fashion by central banks of the world acting in concert by the secret agreements arrived at in private meetings and conferences. Isn't that what we're just, they're telling you, here it is. It's not just BS conspiracies. They actually, here they are. They're throwing it in our faces and laughing at us. You know, Thomas Jefferson once said, and I'll just paraphrase, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that they are all endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men and women, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these means, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute a new government. Of course, this is from the Declaration of Independence. And this is not for just the United States, this is the whole world, because we're all in this game of illusionary depth. this monetary system they've created. They created to divide us. But this is only the symptoms of the disease of this our humanity. Because when I look upon in a more spiritual vision above this pathetic game of risk, we can come and indeed overcome this. With our spiritual understanding, with our spirit, or with our understanding that we are all one consciousness, we can merge our understanding, receiving openly our mind's ears for what the universe and nature is indeed communicating to us. When our divorce from our universe is null and void, the division, the hate, the fear of this cancer of divorce will then simply evaporate. Thus will go the powers to be. And with my words, we are all one. One universe, one consciousness, all connected to one another, connected to God, connected to the universe. And with that, I want to thank you all for listening and all your future listeners. God bless you all and have a glorious, glorious weekend. Thank you. And I close out with a song called Asia from my past guest, Susan Tony. Godspeed. May she heal as quickly as possible. And of course, the song Asia reminds me of someone in the past. Hopefully we will reconnect. God bless you all. And again,